Welcome to Talking Supply Chain. In each episode, you'll hear from the authors that make Supply Chain Management Review such a special publication. This podcast is hosted by Bob Troublecock, Editorial Director of Supply Chain Management Review. Remember that Bob welcomes your comments now to today's episode. Welcome to today's episode of Talking Supply Chain. Keeping the shelves stocked, or how to play smart bets for a winning supply chain. I'm Bob Troublecock, and joining me today is Hannah Kane. Hannah is president and CEO of Alum, a global supply chain management company headquartered in Silicon Valley. And she's been a contributor to SCMR over the years. And hey, you might have even heard her speak at any number of conferences. That's where I met Hannah. Hannah, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Bob.
Well, we're glad to have you on this episode. So last year, when everything started shutting down, I was interviewed at least once a week on why consumers couldn't buy toilet paper, handy wipes, and pork chops. At the time, I think we all figured shortages would sort themselves out once shoppers stopped buying, as if the world was coming to an end, and manufacturers figured out how to operate in a socially distanced and masked shop floor. No such luck. You and I might be able to buy all the toilet paper we want, but if you're a manufacturer, just try and find corrugated for packaging, wooden pallets, memory chip, or any number of essential products. And if you're lucky enough to get the raw materials and supplies you need, good luck finding a shipping container, space on a cargo ship, or a truck to haul your stuff once it lands at a port. We're also hearing that suppliers to the big box retailers are getting fined for late and incomplete shipments, which may be out of their control. It seems that, as with old Mother Hubbard, all of our cupboards are bare. So Hannah, let's start with a basic question. Given the companies you deal with, including global supply chains, what are your clients experiencing when it comes to shortages, but also shortages of transportation assets, port delays? What's happening out there?
Well, Bob, I'm glad you think it's a basic question. Actually, it's a pretty complex business. So as we know, supply chains have become increasingly complex over the last 10 years. And what we're dealing with here is actually a number of different things. We have the increased complexity of the pandemic, and certainly that has the biggest impact on the supply. But we also have a geopolitical situation and trade conflicts that have greatly impacted our ability to move goods around. And then we've got a demand shift that is partly pandemic related and partially something we really could anticipate. And add to that an infrastructure that's really inadequate for the kind of volume we are doing now. And here you have a lot of interesting situations. So what our clients see is we are part of what the role Alum is playing is we are trying to anticipate what's happening, and we are making sure that our clients do not run out of stock. So for those clients who let us manage their inventory, they have actually been really, really lucky because we are essentially shipping 100% on time. But it certainly takes a very resourceful supply chain organization and procurement organization. And we can talk later maybe about how we do that and the tools we pull out of the toolbox. But what I find interesting to think about is what's the timeline in all of this, right? So last year we saw the demand shift, and really there was no significant supply problems in 2020 in the bigger scope of things. 2021 brought a lot of supply problems. And so many of those supply problems are really caused by a big shift in demand. So we are seeing more consumption, and especially in the US, we are seeing just a little decrease in supply. And that then gives us a very big gap between supply and demand. And that has a ripple effect. Now, we all in supply chain know about the whiplash. The whiplash effect, essentially the theory of the whiplash effect is issues, for instance, a supply issue will get magnified throughout the supply chain because people essentially overreact. And so you mentioned the toilet tissue situation that we had last year, and people overreacted, consumers overreacted. They went and they grabbed more toilet tissue off the shelves, and that then created an artificial shortage. And that again made the manufacturers go in and increase production. Well, we didn't really use more toilet tissue when push came to shove. And so now they have an oversupply. And that's what we call the whiplash, that we get that unbalance. And what's happening now is we are in a state where it's very exaggerated. And it's become even more because everybody gets so panic-stricken. So back to how long is this going on? I think it depends on the industry, but overall, the pandemic related, of course, we need to look at it seen from a global perspective. And right now we have somewhere around 13% of the world vaccinated. And until we get up to a much higher percentage, we should not feel safe when it comes to a supply chain situation. And so overall, I'm saying 3 years is not an outrageous guess. But some industries, of course, are very impacted right now. So you look at things like semiconductors, where, again, a demand shift, but also some supply problems have impacted that. That's, of course, a structural problem and requires building of factories, etc. So that's also a long-term situation. And then we've got other industries where it's just, as you mentioned, transportation or other very specific parts of the supply chain. And that could be solved in months or maybe a year. So it really depends on the industry.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And so one of the interesting things to follow for me has been the entire mask situation where you probably recall, Bob, when we go back to early in the pandemic, we had a big mask problem. Everybody was going around for masks and employers were supposed to provide masks for their employees. But it was hard to lay your hands on a mask. And then everybody went out and made masks. And the procurement organizations were out there placing big orders for masks. And now we have a huge amount of surplus of masks. The general feel is we've got hundreds of millions of surplus masks in the U.S. So it's a good example of this whiplash effect we're talking about.
You know, I read the mask story, I think, in either the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times last week. So it that's a great example. Let me just ask you a quick question. When you look at what's going on right now, I was interviewing a VP of supply chain last week who likened this sudden increase in demand to, you know, the proverbial snake swallowing a mouse, right? Snake looks all nice and smooth, swallows a mouth, and all of a sudden there's a big lump in the middle of the snake until the snake can digest the mouse. And his theory was we've had this sudden uptick in demand, and so everything is sort of like the snake swallowing the mouse. We've got a big bulge there, but we'll work through that, and then things will kind of smooth out. Do you see it that way, or do you see this as, you know, you just used the potential 3-year term. Do you see this as a temporary blip, like the mouse and the snake, or a longer term?
No, I think it's a fallacy with the snake metaphor, fun as it is. So again, going back to the start of the pandemic, everybody was thinking, okay, we have a pandemic, and then there's a beginning and there's an end. And now we're all starting to see that's not how it's playing out. And it's the same with the the shortages and the supply problems we're having. So let's, for instance, look at the infrastructure problems we're having. We are having problems in ports, both out of Asia and into the US. We are having problems with transportation vehicles, with the containers, rail, trucks. You know, we just have a shortage of that. That's a structural problem. It's got only marginal relation to the pandemic. And it's, by the way, a problem we have known for 10 years or better, right? So my feeling on those type of infrastructure problems is 5 to 10 years out before we solve them. Now, we look at a thing like the problems with lumber. Well, you know, maybe that is related to the how many people are vaccinated in Canada. And so you look at that, well, that may be resolved in, let's all say, 4 to 6 months. So I think it's way more complex than saying, okay, it's one thing and then it's over. We have so many things, different issues that are interrelated. Trade conflict with China. We still are settling the entire Brexit issues. We have the infrastructure. We have the pandemic and the different recovery from pandemic globally. So it's truly, I mean, supply chain professionals are used to dealing with the complexity. And as I said, there's a lot of added complexity here. It makes risk mitigation and risk analysis really complex. Those of us who thrive on those type of things would say it's also a fun challenge to have, but it's scary in many ways because there are so many variables that we need to take into account. So no snake, or at least there are lots of snakes, and they go at different rates.
Well, I guess if I look at what's going on in India right now, you know, which is a major supplier, I haven't read to see how it's impacting, you know, manufacturing output in India. But you have to think that given the ravages of the pandemic in India right now, that it's, you know, affecting supply. You hit on something I think is pretty important and leads to what I wanted to ask you next, which is, you know, some of these challenges predate the pandemic, particularly the trade wars and the border wars and things that were going on, you know, even before March of 2020. And as a result, you know, we hear a lot about companies reevaluating their networks and supply strategies to decide how to rethink, you know, where to source materials. You hear about the China plus one strategy, for instance, or having two suppliers and for something that you only have one now, but having them in different geographies. What are the strategies that you're seeing? What's effective? And how do I do that analysis to figure out how to make a bet on sourcing vital components?
Well, nearshoring certainly helps in the sense that anytime you have a border crossing, it's a risk element in your supply chain. So you need to get product out of a country, you know, to the border crossing. You need to get it transacted out of a country and then transacted into another country and then transported again. And so that increases complexity and risk. But nearsourcing is definitely nearsourcing, meaning close to the market where you intend to sell the item. It's certainly a safer strategy, but all supply chain has risk. So let me tell you some of the strategies that we deploy that we have found very effective. And this is new. It really requires rethinking of procurement strategies. So most corporations have been chasing the last dollar. And when you look at it, the procurement organization, if you are in procurement, you have for decades being rewarded on can you get the unit cost down. And the supply chain cost has factored in a little bit, but not to the extent it should have. And definitely nobody has been doing risk analysis associated with driving the cost down. So this creates the China strategy. It creates a number of different relationships that's mostly focused on price. And for many years, some of us have been advocating a different approach to procurement strategy, which is how do you become most preferred customer of your suppliers? And so that entire thinking is about collaboration. It's about having a strategy where you're making sure the suppliers are okay. You're still doing your supplier governance. You're still making sure they are doing the right thing, but you're also making sure that they are taken care of. So what I saw when the pandemic started was some of the large corporations in the U.S. Sent an email out to their suppliers and said, by the way, we are now moving your payment terms out and an additional 30 days. Well, you know, some of those are small suppliers that simply couldn't carry another 30 days. And what we did was the opposite. We called our suppliers and said, how are you doing? Which issues do you have? And would it help you if we paid earlier? And so we have that collaborative strategy. So going back to how does that work seen from a financial standpoint? Well, two things. Research has shown that the collaborative strategy is more profitable. Companies that do the collaborative supplier strategy are simply more profitable. They get the innovation, they get the more collaboration, right? It goes both ways. But what we especially have seen here during a shortage situation is that the preferred customers, of course, get first dibs on the what comes off the production lines. And that has created a big competitive advantage. So I think if you go back and you look at some of the strategies and some of the corporations that now are struggling with supplies, some of that comes from a strategic decision. This is going to be hard to change because, as I said, there are millions of buyers out there who have always been rewarded on price, get price reductions, negotiate the supplier down. And you know what? You don't get the same when you have negotiated with people such that you know they start being bloodied and start thinking about whether they want that business at all. And then you punch them, and then you pay them late. You just don't get that type of collaboration. So I think a collaborative supplier strategy is number one. But of course, we also need to look at safety stock. And a lot of people think that just-in-time is about having zero safety stock, and that's a fallacy. And that was never, ever the idea about just-in-time. So look at the safety stock. And then, of course, have contingency plans. So those are some of the strategies that work.
I think you made a great point on the lowest cost strategy. And as a data point, you know, buyer beware, this is an anecdote of one. But I had an interview with a gentleman by the name of Bobby Berg, who's the chief supply chain officer for Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits. They're the largest distributor of, you know, wine and alcoholic beverages in the world. And when Bobby and I talked about, you know, what's changing in his supply chain, he said the biggest change is that historically they were a high volume, low cost supply chain. And he said, now we're really moving to where we're really focused on what does our customer need and what's it going to take to do that? Mm-hmm. And he said, cost is still important, but cost is now number three. It's not the number one thing that's driving our supply chain.
Yeah, so that entire thinking about risk in a different manner. So I think we're going to see a lot of modeling around risk in the supply chain and how can we do that. My concern right now, to be honest, is people look at this very, very narrowly. And if I can encourage something, to look at it a little bit bigger, because we are very focused on inventory right now and supply. but there are other risks in the supply chain. And I think we need to factor that in and think about it and monetize the risk such that we understand it. And that's why, you know, this has become a strategic issue up at the board level in the C-suite. This is getting way more attention. We are having full spotlight on the supply chain right now because, you know, in the end, if the shelves are empty, the revenue is not coming in. And, you know, it's a plus, you know, you have a reputation risk. So it's a huge issue.
So you hit on the, you know, the just in time versus just in case. Since you manage inventories for, you know, lots of customers, are you doing more just in case and carrying more inventory than in the past?
Well, we are really looking at it on a case-by-case basis. That includes where's the inventory positioned, how many sources do we have, what is which contingency plans do we have, and how certain are we of the contingency plans? But certainly, we are carrying more stock than we used to, and I think anybody worth the salt is doing that. And we are thinking very carefully about where we position that extra stock. But I mean, we are seeing it warehouse prices going up. We are seeing it in the different indexes out there that everybody is increasing their inventory levels. And, you know, we are back to the whiplash effect because, of course, we are all sending a signal to our suppliers that we need more. But now we're having this safety stock. So next year, maybe we need less. And so I think no matter where you are in the supply chain, you need to think about those demand swings and how it impacts your actual demand on a longer term and not overextend yourself because you're thinking, oh, this order level is going to continue. No, other players in the supply chain may be overstocking right now. And so it's a difficult time to be in supply chain because you need to think about how people are reacting. There's some physical element, but there's also an emotional element that we all want to be safe and have the safety stock on hand. And just don't let your suppliers suffer by thinking this is a new normal.
The last question, Hannah, and thanks. This has been great. You know, the two words that we hear over and over and over during COVID are resilience and agility. And as a supply chain, executive, as a supply chain manager, how are you applying those two concepts to the supply chains that Alum manages?
Well, certainly we are looking and we've always used tools to manage the inventory very carefully. One of them is, of course, postponement. So configuring the product as late in the process as possible. It allows you to cut down on the what you could call the basic SKU and then configure as the product goes out. We also, look at how we can reposition inventory reasonably fast and building those supplier relations that are so important in order to be able to respond to demand. And then, having the right resources to be able to move things, etc. If we need to understand that, there's a shortage of transportation and a number of other factors in the supply chain. It is going to cost more. We are seeing the inflation happening right now. There are theories about whether this is going to continue or not. I think that we are in for a longer term inflation as we go through this period. But certainly it's going to impact the landed cost or the cost out to the end user of the product. But again, when I look at resilience and agility, I'm not just looking at inventory. I'm also thinking the bigger risks. So I, you know, as we do risk analysis, we are also looking at things like cybersecurity. I am very concerned that cyber hacking in the supply chain industry is up 42% year over year. And I'm concerned that we will see some big infrastructure hacks that's going to really disrupt things. And what we are seeing right now, because we are in this very fragile situation, it doesn't take a lot of disruption to really upset the entire apple cart, right? And so we all had followed the Suez Canal incident, right? And had that happened a couple of years ago, it would have been just a little bit of entertainment, right, for a couple of days. And I guess not entertainment for the people who were involved, but for the rest of the world. But today, we all think about, oh, now this is one more thing that's coming in and shifting inventory around, creating delays in the harbors, those type of things. So we are in this fragile ecosystem that's where the balance is easily upset. So I'd encourage everybody to think more about the bigger supply chain risks and not be overly focused on the one thing that we are dealing with right now as they do future risk analysis.
That's great advice, Hannah. Thank you. That's all the time we have today. I want to thank Hannah Kane for joining me today, and I hope you'll be back for our next episode. Until then, for Supply Chain Management Review and Talking Supply Chain, I'm Bob Troublecock. Talking Supply Chain is produced by Supply Chain Management Review and Peerless Media. You can find it on scmr.com, on iTunes, or under SC247. Or just Google SC247 podcasts. For more information, be sure to visit scmr.com. We hope you'll join us again.